Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Aramaic Friday. Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor. I'm Michelle Pache, and I'm here today with Dr. Michael Rice and his co-host, Dale Hoffman. We warmly welcome you to the show, and thank you for choosing to be with us. Today is October 10th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk with Dr. Rice. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. So now, let's welcome Michael and Dale in the process of learning and experiencing Aramaic forgiveness.
Well, thank you, young lady. I hope my sound is fairly clear. We are actually on the road. Jeannie's driving, and we're on the interstate. We're just coming up to an exit. We'll get off, so it'll be a little quieter. Are you hearing me without too much noise in the background?
It's not too bad.
Say it again. Yes or no? Oh, good. Okay. I couldn't hear what you said, but Jeannie's listening, and she was able to hear you. So anyway, we're just delighted to have this opportunity once again to host Dale Allen Hoffman, whose website is www.daleallenhoffman.com. And a young man that is probably, in my mind, one of the foremost scholars in the Aramaic world today, because he has the practical application of the tools from the ancient Aramaic. Sadly, most people living in their heads and call themselves scholars are living in their heads. They're not living in the world of what was the work, what was the direction that Yeshua pointed us. Words, of course, only point a direction to the use of tools. And we live in a culture that's become so intellectually oriented that the actual use of the tools has been supplanted by the use of words. And we're looking to reverse that process to give people the how-to of really truly living as human beings. And our definition of a human being is simple. Hold a newborn child, you know exactly what a human life is. If you don't have one of those, all the studying, all the ivory tower in the world won't do you one flip of good. It won't get you anywhere. But if you've got some tools for removing the things that cover the truth about who you are as that awesome presence of love and experience yourself as that, your life is going to change dramatically. Welcome, Dale. What do you have on your mind today? Are you mute challenged, Dale?
Mike, yep, here he goes.
Aha, the miracle of a button. Hi.
There we go.
I have beauty on my mind. I just had an amazing week. A lot of things lining up, and I finally, like after years of talking with lots of different managers and booking agents and promoters and all that and never really feeling the fit, my gut always told me I'd find someone that was sort of right under my nose in a way. And there was actually someone that's approached me over the last couple of years a couple of times, and I don't know what frame of mind I was in, you know, saying that she wanted to help me book events and promote them, et cetera. And finally she said it like last week, and she's connected in with some really amazing musicians like Paradiso and Rasa Mayi, who do healing music with like crystal bowls and didgeridoos and all these things. And anyway, so now I've got somebody that's doing all my business for me, and it's somebody that's a dear friend that was right there the whole time. And so from January 1st onward, I've got someone that's picking up that end of my what I'm doing, and fortunately she's local. My wife will be able to sort of work with her, and wow, it's just a big, it's been a lot to keep, you know, having a full family with three kids and a wife, and you know, stay on top of booking and promotions and that kind of stuff. Wow, it's been a huge energy shift for me, and that's just, wow, just in the last couple of days. So anyway,
well, congratulations. That's awesome. I know how all of that goes, and how
yeah, you do.
With this unfold.
Yeah, it was funny because the thing that I knew I wasn't interested in, like, I'm not really interested in the whole, the, I don't know how to put it, you know, like my gut lets me know when I'm getting into shtick. You know, some people are fine with, you know, in the shtick of marketing saying it's only business, and I don't do that. I've never done that. And I knew that I wanted someone where I wasn't, that was representing me, where I wasn't a name on a roster, but rather it was someone that was already passionate for what I'm doing. And it started from that, and she totally, you know, loves the work that's coming through from every angle. And that to me was the most important thing. Plus, she's got connections, plus she's got that drive, and she's already got other people that she represents and adding more. So it's a good thing. Anyway, so I'm happy. But I was happy already.
I understand. I know that over the years I've run into a lot of people who are, you do what? You travel and you pay your own expenses?
Yeah.
You do what? You do your workshops free? Don't you know that this is about money? It's like, well, actually, you don't get it. It's not about money. It's about service. It's about bringing forward, you know, the line from the Beatitudes as it translates out of the Kabor's manuscript, and the line that says, those who, through service, effectively produce the peace and understanding under and in accord with love's will. And that's what it's really all about. And those who don't understand, and that's okay.
Yeah. I've had so many offers from, you know, just big business and big, you know, I just went through that with publishers, book publishers, talking with so many of them and realizing that that's a paradigm that just doesn't interest me. It's like, that's the thing. I mean, right from the beginning, I've self-published everything, every single CD I recorded and I edited and did the music editing in, and because I wanted to make sure that it was what I wanted going out and that it had that presence, that the consciousness was in it. And I never felt anything that, it always felt like every offer I ever got up to this point always felt, and there, some of them were even from managers, from major speakers, and it was always, it just wasn't it. It just didn't feel right. It didn't have the integrity. It didn't have that openness to it. And so it feels great, but yeah, it was amazing because in my family, it was like you could feel a shift in the house as soon as that sort of that got solidified in a way, because I mean, dad's locked in the back working. It was kind of like the main thing for hours every day, you know, this, whether it's promotions, whether it's stirring up some new things or something like that. So this frees that part up for me and for more time with my family. And so anyway, if it was me solo, it wouldn't have been a big deal, but it's not me solo, and I'm thankful that it's not me solo. But anyway, so.
Well, I have always wondered just how you have traveled and handled the things you handle with three kids. And I know that other times you've had obligations where you've taken other family members, children on, small, little ones. So I acknowledge you for that and your willingness to keep putting it out there. So anything exciting on your mind about the Aramaic today?
Yeah, absolutely. I got a message from someone like recently within the last few days asking about sort of insights about the Beatitudes And he was kind of like, what does it really say in the Aramaic? And I haven't replied yet, but I started writing a response that kind of really focuses or revolves around the realization that you can't get there from here, meaning, well, you know what I mean by that, in that it's such a reality, reality is not the word, it's such a shift in perception, what was actually there as opposed to what we have today, that you got to sort of even be conscious and careful of some who may sort of consider themselves some kind of experts, because a lot of people don't realize that in Aramaic, and I mean, I talk about it all the time, but a lot of people may not realize that in Aramaic, even a lot of the things, the way we look at, like people, what they'll do is they'll become like whatever, an Aramaic scholar, and they'll reverse engineer and they'll put, they'll basically take like King James texts and lay them next to Aramaic texts and compare one to the other. And just what they'll do is keep the King Jamesy kind of stuff basically there and just tweak it a little bit so that it's a little bit closer to Aramaic. You know, and one of the things people don't realize, as an example, is when I started meeting a lot of modern Assyrians, people from Syria and also Assyrian speakers in Iraq and Iran, I was completely struck years ago when they started telling me, now I've had dozens of them tell me that their family actually brought or sort of rekindled the Aramaic language, especially in relationship to the Bible, by laying the King James Bible next to their Aramaic Bibles and cross-referencing the King James. So in other words, they were learning with the Aramaic language, they were actually learning it with the meanings of King James English. And what's amazing is that you can actually find scholars today, or like I say, experts, put that in quotes. I definitely don't call myself one, but whatever people want to say, whatever. But it's interesting. You can meet people that are experts who are doing exactly that same thing. They'll just basically cross-reference what's there on the page for the Aramaic to what's there in the King James. And a lot of people go out there and teach that, not realizing that that's not calibrated to the first century meaning. It's simply calibrated to a 17th century European meaning. And it's an interesting, strange, odd kind of veil that I encounter sometimes, where people just will hear like what I'm doing and they'll go, oh my God, you know, this isn't anything like the Lamza Bible. And I'm like, remember, Lamza George, you know, I wouldn't be here without him. And he only made a small fraction of what he could have made in terms of alterations, because he thought that people would just throw the thing out if he brought it through to the fullest extent of what he saw that as in the Aramaic. And the funny thing is, people still threw out the Lamza Bible in a lot of ways. And also, what he knew then barely scratches the surface of what we know now through not only research, but science and physics and psychology and just our, you know, spiritual awakening that we're going through. And people, I'm really doing my best to sort of let people know, you know, just stay open, stay open, stay open. That doesn't mean vulnerable, but stay open to even viewpoints that sound exactly opposite of what you're talking about. And again, that wraps right back to forgiveness. I realize, as an example, if I read something about Aramaic that I may sense is totally off, if I've got some kind of a rub with it, then that's something for me to look at inside of myself and to be open to what they're saying and hear it. And, you know, if I don't agree, I don't agree. But to not lace my own sort of unconscious dynamics into it. So, anyway.
Well, it's interesting that it's a huge piece of learning for anyone to get, that if they've got any kind of rub about anything, they have work to do. And that if they don't work through that rub, internal dynamic, then the mind will distort everything that it looks at. And my understanding is that George Lamsa, when he was doing his original translation work, his life was threatened because he wasn't following the good Christian texts about love the way that they'd been taught by the King James decoding of those words. And, you know, when you think about the oxymoron of, this is a book about God who is love, and if you don't translate the way I do, I'll kill you. You got to know on its face without any question, or I'll condemn you, or I'll send you to hell. You got to know that person doesn't have a clue what they're talking about right from the beginning. And the terror that people have had inflicted upon them in order to stay with the fear-based translations and the terror at even questioning, could this possibly be wrong, is just huge. And it takes courage to step outside those old lines. And, you know, so much of the world, including, sadly, the Aramaic world, as it exists today in several places, has been infected so deeply by these fear-based teachings. And, you know, when you think about the oxymoron, it's hard for the mind that's been brainwashed in fear to see that love and fear are an oxymoron. They are opposite ends of the spectrum. You can't put them together in the same sentence. You just can't do it. And yet, that fear has been used to infect the whole world and to step in with the forgiveness process to remove the fear, recognizing, you know, there's some good research that was done by a medical doctor at Tulane University, Dr. Robert Heath, and he did brain implant EEGs. And his take was there were three signature frequencies in the brain, and they were each mutually exclusive. When one was active, the other two could not be active. And those three signature frequencies were fear, hostility, and love. And his take was that fear destroyed the body of the fearful. Hostility destroyed the mind of the hostile. Pardon me. Let me reverse that. No, that's right. Fear destroyed the body. Hostility destroyed the mind. And love restored both. But only one can be active at a time. You can't have a fear-based conversation and be talking about the Creator. It's just, you know, they're mutually exclusive. They're an oxymoron. They're kind of like trying to put the word military and intelligence together in the same sentence. They just don't go together. So it's pretty bizarre when you look at how far-reaching that fear-based translation has gone, and that there is no justification in the Aramaic for it at all. No justification. Yeshua said, I come to correct. And he corrects. But everybody still wants to see every word as being true. And every word isn't true. So, thoughts?
You know, one of the things I get a lot is a lot of people will ask me something like, what does the Bible really say about homosexuality? Or what does it really say about this? Or what does it really say about that? Or what did Jesus really say? And a lot of those... the ones that I do have time to answer, I may give some kind of answer. I might talk about some particular verse or something, but the thing that really is for me the most important is, again, it's staying open. Part of it is definitely realizing and even admitting, allowing ourselves to admit that our gut has told us that, you know, just because it's there on the pages of the Bible doesn't necessarily mean, number one, that it happened, or number two, that it's correct. And oh my God, the blasphemy, the things you get for the thing that's funny is I would take that personally, and it would bring fear up in me years ago when something like that would happen, and I would get whatever attack, by whether it's verbal or whatever, by people that were based in that fear and hostility. And yet today it's so beautiful in that I'm able to stay in that light, stay in that presence, stay in the openness, and know that when the attack thoughts happen, to know that if I feel something, that's mine to own. And when I can be in that presence and be in that light and hold that space for them, that there is that potential, at least the potential, for them to be able to have a wider view, to be able to release some of that and let some of that go and throw some of that off And even just knowing that fighting back, or as an example, replying with lots and lots of information, if someone says, that's wrong because blah, I got caught in that, you know, I let myself get caught in that on YouTube for a while, or even Facebook is just probably even more so, how you can put a quote up, and I mean, I've had people just, someone will put like a comment on something that I put up, someone who has a lot of experience with the thing that I put up, and then all of a sudden I'll watch lots of people who have no experience with that just attack in absolute hostility. And then I found myself often biting the hook, or as an example, I put up some quote or something like that, or someone else does, and then people love to drag me into it. They're like, what do you think about this, Dale Allen Hoffman, you know, and tag me in it. And then if I start commenting on that, then it, again, I bite that hook, trying to get people to, whatever that is, you know, understand the truth of what it really says in Aramaic or some lofty thing like that. And I realized that so much of my actual life with my family and being able to expand the vision of the work that I'm doing in the world was being lost on social media like that, whether it be YouTube comments on my YouTube stuff, or, you know, I'd sit down and spend an hour and a half writing a long response to someone that wrote a sentence at saying, oh, that's not what that means, this is what it means. And the reason I would take so long is because I wanted it to be thorough. And then I was like, wait a second, Dale, you know, your little girl is in the next room and she's wanting you to roll that ball back and forth. And here you are thinking that this is this somehow, what's online is somehow more important, when by doing that, you're actually forgetting the central importance, which is this, you know, beautiful little being right beside you right now. And it felt so good that about maybe 3 months ago that I pulled the plug on, I might spend a total of 5 minutes on Facebook broken up over the course of a week. And it's a great thing for people that are sort of locked away and don't have friends or something like that. But man, I'd really love to have people look back at the people that are beside them and realize a lot of times if you've got just like a drug, just like hostility, fear, alcohol, drugs, whatever it may be, that you got to look and see what Facebook says, you know, start recognizing that in your life and come back to the people that are surrounding you, the beautiful beings that are all around us. That doesn't mean there's not some kind of importance in that, but in the social media thing, but it just felt so good to be able to let that go several months ago. And the funny thing was, almost instantaneously, I was getting direct messages and comments on my profile, like, what, you don't reply to things anymore? What, you don't reply to your messages as what anymore? What, you know? And it was funny. So I found entertainment in that aspect of it, too. But, yeah. Anyway, it's just that belief that somehow, because a lot of people see it or whatever that may be, that somehow it's more important. It's kind of an illusion that I've cracked through in the last few months, realizing that, you know, that's not what's important. What's important is that I'm open in the moment and then I'm in presence, and that my veils are, you know, in this moment are burned through. And if there's anything that needs to be thrown off, that I throw it off. It's sort of taking my focus off of effect and bringing it back to cause, I guess, is what I'm saying.
There's a writer named Leonard Ravenhill, and an interesting quote. He says, "The holy book of the living God suffers more from its exponents today than from its opponents."
Hmm. Wow. That's. I think that hits it so, it really hits it on the head. You know, the other thing that brings up for me is, like, when someone will ask me about, someone will, whatever it is about, whatever the subject is, homophobia, mistranslations, something, and you feel that, you know, when I can feel that fear and hostility, my response is so clear now that it's not about any information of what I'd studied. That's not really the key. The key is, am I able to be present in this moment? Am I able to be fully in this, you know, conversation, discussion, without being sort of like gone unconscious by, you know, the veils of my past experience, the hidden past? And one of the basic, my response to almost all of those things now is, when I'm asked different kinds of questions about, you know, what does it really say about homosexuality, what do you feel about gay marriage, etc., and first of all, I say what Al Pacino said, of all people, Scarface himself said, I'll have to censor it slightly. He said, I don't understand a blank thing about why people are so obsessed about who someone chooses to love. What's important is that they love. And then the other side of that for me is that, and it all comes down to that, regardless of information of what is or isn't in the Bible or even my opinion, how do you feel right now? How does your physiology feel when you're in this of judgment of whatever you think marriage is or is not? What's the physiology in your body? How do you feel? Are you coming from a place of absolute love, a place of wholeness, a place of holiness, of sacredness, or is the physiology in your body based on fear? Is it based on hostility, the fear of marriage being redefined, and the fear of somehow the loss of what we think traditional marriage is here in the West, or the misnomer that America was based on Christianity and built upon Christianity, which it was not? All you have to do is study history on that one. And I mean, I've been able to get to that, to like sort of boil it down with people and say, look, if you're coming from fear and hostility, and this is where you're coming from, it really, truly does not matter what you think when you're in that state, other than if you're willing to own that, take responsibility for it, and get it out of your system. Because anything in that state of being in fear and hostility is insanity. So if you're going to come and make judgments about other people or the way other people were born into this life and how they live their life, if it's from fear and hostility, I love you. Thank you for being here. I hear your opinion, and yet I do not care what you think. Well, there you go. I just said that. I do care what you think, and yet I'm doing being as open as I can to be in that space and still hold the love conscious, active, and present for you, even when you're not able to do that. So it's amazing. So, and there it is. You catch it. You know, I do not care. Of course you care. Of course you care, because if you didn't, you wouldn't say it. You know, it wouldn't even come out. So, because I do care what they think. Yet at the same time, if it's not coming from love, I'm 100% perfectly fine with moving on. If it's going to stay in the fear and the hostility and the judgment, you can play that on your own time. You know, you've got the space to do whatever you want in this life, but count me out, because I'm not doing it. I feel blessed to live in Asheville, North Carolina, where freaks walk down the street. You know, the homeless hang out with the millionaires, literally, you know, people with green hair, shaved heads with spikes drilled into their skull. Anything you can imagine is here in Asheville. And I notice when I get into the more sheltered places that aren't around sort of everybody of every shade and color, I notice that it's a little more difficult for them, because they're not around, you know, all different kinds of people all the time. And I just feel such a blessing to be in a place where I am around anybody you can imagine at any point in time. And that includes absolute ultra conservative, banging on the Bible, fire and brimstone, Southern Baptist, ultra Republican to the core, Christians. And yet I've got friends like that. And I've got friends that, are agnostic and atheist and Satanists. Yes, I have Satanist friends, and I love them dearly, and they love me dearly. So, I just feel it's an honor to be a part of this and to be able to have that realization that I got from Michael back in 95 of understanding that core of forgiveness. I always come back to it, because to me it's number one. Everything else is secondary to that.
Well, yep, that's the first law. It's pretty much laid out there. And if you don't get that one, you know, I love the phrase that completes Yeshua's answer in Aramaic. When he's asked what's the first law, and he offers that the first law is rachma, which does not mean love, but rather maintain a condition in your mind, whoever you're looking at and thinking about, because it's only as you maintain that condition in your mind that you're actually human. And, you know, non-human opinion isn't worth a whole lot. It destroys a lot of the world. But if we maintain that condition, and then what Yeshua adds to it, and actually the latest book that I've been working on, or started to work on, it's kind of been set aside for now, but The End of Suffering, Resurrecting the Original Aramaic Yeshua the Christ, was originally called The 11 Most Important Words Ever Spoken. Because after he tells people what the first law is, he says, "For upon this hangs the law and all its prophets." In other words, if you don't have that, you can forget the rest. If you don't have the active condition of love in your mind, if you don't have a human life available to you, and recognizing that love isn't something we do to each other, it's who we are,
If we don't have who we are active in us, then all we are is a reactive multi-generational database that can do any form of insanity in the name of love and think itself right and proper. It can condemn, it can send people to hell, it can kill, it can slaughter, it can maim, it, you know, it can do it all because there's no human life in it. And so that first condition, if people could just comprehend that one little word and that one phrase, that you maintain your human life first, and then you look at the book, and the book will make sense to you. Upon this hangs the law and all its prophets. Do you have any thoughts on that particular aspect of it, Dale?
Well, first of all, when you it's kind of funny because when you talk, I can't remember exactly how you said it. It was something to the effect of if you can't, you know, I can't remember what it was, something like be your real self. There was the way you turned it that was just – it was hilarious in a way that kind of like if you can't be who you really are in the moment, then you're, well, you're insane is part of it. But, yeah, I mean, I always talk about that, that what's so important is that we're not talking here about mnemosa as in a man-made law or ordinance. What a huge differentiation there that, of course, that I got from Laws of Living, as opposed to aurita and that ta gendering that feminine, meaning that it's a state of being. It's not something you live within. It's not a fence. It's not some kind of precepts or ordinance or man-made, what we would call law, though I wouldn't call that law, that we live inside of, but rather we do what Yeshua was advising, which is tear down all the fences to be in the open gate, to be in the open space, the tareya, the portal, which is where Rachma is. And when you're in that space, it lives you. It's like the Tuvei Hun at the beginning of each of the Beatitudes. It's latent. It's almost like a latent awareness. It's a dormant. It's the system is already there. The channel is there. The pathway is already there. And when you become conscious of it, that activates. And when that activates, that's your innate guidance system. It's already built into your system. But if you've got it clogged up and the gate is closed and the door is shut down with fear and hostility and all of those bushel baskets and veils of all that fear and judgment, it doesn't guide you. What guides you is your hostility and your shadows and your darkness. Because, of course, you know, if that light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? Again, that's your perception. And if your perception is coming from those hidden past experiences that are just those things that we – it's amazing. I mean, I even myself occasionally, less than before, but so many times in my life that I've caught myself living from the point of view of when I was like 4 years old, taking myself back to being a four-year-old, and here I am, you know, now in my early 40s, and occasionally you're acting like a four-year-old. And it's funny, if someone comes up and says, you know what, you're acting like a four-year-old, it would be so offensive. Oh, horrible, awful, how dare you say that about me, accuse me of being like a four-year-old, as I pout and fold my arms and, you know, do the silent treatment for the next 10 minutes. How dare they say that to me? Oh, my God, I don't act like a four-year-old. It's amazing to be able to see yourself doing these crazy things that we all do and to take responsibility for that and to be able to, you know, to be in a holy, beautiful relationship like I am so that when one of us isn't able to, that the other can hold that space, including especially with our children, that, you know, if one's not quite able to be in that space, that one can, you know, exit to the other room while this one, whether it's me or Loretta or vice versa, you know, can stay in the space with the child that's having the blowout fit, and then we can be open in that. And then when we both lose it, you know, with our matching bags of garbage, that's an interesting experience as well. And we can be caught by the kids occasionally, by Maya, Mikey or Lucinda, or even Shemaya will sometimes, 3 years old, catch us. And like as an example, I've probably talked about it on the show before, I can be doing one thing, even if it's not like an argument or something, but something that I think is so important. And Shemaya will literally crawl up into my lap, move my face away from the screen of my my monitor, you know, my computer monitor, from that ever so important work, because people are breathing down my neck for press releases and flyers and things, and she can hold my face in her hands and look into my eyes and give me a kiss on the nose and remind me of what it's really all about. That if I'm doing all this, yeah, I'm doing all this creation. Oh, I'm going to get it done. I got to get it done. And every single ounce of that hostility or fear of not getting it done quick enough or hostility about having to do it, and it laces itself into every single thing that I create. You know, she brings me back to the moment. She brings me back to what's important by just being exactly who she is.
Well, and a new subtlety that I'd feedback now would be that when you say, you know, when I'm in that hostility, no matter what it's about, whether it's about, you know, them breathing down my neck, of course, that's a...
Yeah, I heard that when it went out. I hear
playing
it.
Its subtle game of denial. Oh, my hostility is about this happening out there in the world rather than my hostility is about, oh, here's another layer of my hostility to clean up, you know.
Yeah, I heard it when it went out. I'm conscious of those, yeah. It's good stuff.
You know, how subtly we can do that denial game, and it just, you know, keep coming back to me every time I, you know, there's no because in the world when we play the game of it's because of this, it's because of that, it's because my spouse did this, because my kids did that. No, it's because that's what's in us. And, you know, when you realize that I'm really comprehending more and more, getting to see that the enormity of the multi-generational database and its longings. You know, there's some new research we've been talking about the last couple of weeks that's coming out more and more from the genetic community about how feelings, thoughts, fears are all being passed on to us. And when you recognize that it's a generational pattern to be called to hostility, to guilt, to fear, to rage, to sadness, and that we bring in that first century Aramaic forgiveness process of, oh, this is how I remove my hostility. This is how I remove my fear, my grief, my rage, my sadness, whatever it happens to be. It's just awesome when you realize just the enormity of the work that needs to be done. And, you know, basically the Greeks said, don't ever open Pandora's box. You'll never know what you'll find in there. But they didn't tell us that if we don't open Pandora's box, our whole life becomes Pandora's box. And the cleanup is the challenge.
Pandora's box. You know, that gets me thinking of, it was a poem, and I don't know if, I don't think John Denver actually wrote it, but it was on the album Poems, Prayers, and Promises. It was called The Box, and it was about war, and it says, it talked about the, you know, don't open the box that's chained with chained and locks with, or chained with chains and locked with locks, but kindly don't mess about with war and all this stuff. And it was basically kind of like a poem about, sort of like basically about Pandora's box and saying, don't open it, don't open it. But I think that's one of the reasons why in so many cases we still have this, you know, what's happening. We still are in many ways going back to war because there's not a lot of open dialogue and discussion, because it's so much like when you get, as an example, Israel and Palestine together, there's not really a lot of common space there so much as, okay, this is my chance to get them over to my point of view, rather than, you know, that the Aramaic and Hebraic realization that Shlama in Aramaic or Shalom in Hebrew, peace doesn't mean the absence of conflict. What it actually means is embracing the fullness of potential to allow what is in this moment to be as it is. But yet the only reason we wouldn't be able to is if our veils were resonating and we were in the hostility and fear in the moment and we're in that judgment. And if we could just, wow, that's why every mind on the planet is so important. If we could just one person at a time or 10 people at a time, however many people, to come into that realization that if you're feeling it, it's yours. How do you know who's feeling it? You are. Oh, hold on a second. Wow. Kids get it. Until we pile things on top, but they get it.
Exactly. And what you bring up for people engaged in war, when you look at how massive the cover-up is for war. If you enter the conversation, there's one basic reason for war. We want your property. That's all. That's the basic reason for war. Now you say, well, yeah, but wait a minute, this one did this and that one. Yeah, this one did this and that one did that. But why did this one do this and why did that one do that? We want your property. We want to steal from you. So
So we're going to send men with guns to kill you and take what we want. And if you look back behind every conflict, that's what's behind every conflict. And behind that is we have non-human life. We have those who have human forms who don't have the active presence of love in them. And so if in order to get what they want, they've been told, well, it's okay to kill because, you know, somebody gave permission, then that carbon-based memory system will kill without question and call what they're doing holy and right. And so when you enter into that conversation, you are opening Pandora's box, and the trillions of dollars being pumped out of the average person's pocket in order to maintain the fraud that it's about patriotic, that it's about the bad guys and the good guys. The trillions of dollars that are pumped out of people's pockets. That's going to be one of the big ones to work through, because the attachment to the lie in order to, and you know, I love the Course in Miracles thought of that you must become aware of the distorting power of the way you want it to be. And if you recognize that the way we want it to be is, I need to get my prosperity from out there because I don't have a direct connection with the Creator, so I need to take it from somebody else, then, you know, and I need to be the innocent protector, then, of course, we'll step into that role and play that one out. And that's a tough one to face and go through when you look at the fact that in the last 75 years, we've murdered 275 million people on the planet. And we've had wars that were called wars to end war. It's like, talk about the oxymoron on top of the oxymoron on top of the moron. I mean, that's it. And so it's a pretty threatening conversation, the stuff that comes up, the rage, the pain, the just the ability to say, oh, my God, what have I done, is monumental. So start with the smaller stuff. But that's the biggie, the real box, I think, that he was talking about in that song is the box of justification and rage that keeps the money flowing from peons' pockets to somebody else's pocket. And it's time for a change of mind all across the planet. And, you know, we're working to change one mind at a time until we come to the point where we recognize, you know, what's it really all about, Elfie? Is it about getting somebody else's stuff or even having stuff ourselves, or is it about living as a human being?
Such huge shifts.
Interesting process.
Such huge shifts.
Yeah.
Recently, I mean, we haven't been so quick to, I remember, was it last September when, I can't even remember who it was, everything just, it's like a changing cast of characters in terms of war. And although we've sort of mixed ourselves into some more stuff now, but I do remember when Obama was wanting to move in on someone, it was like September of last year. I just mixed the characters up in my head as to who it is. And the American people were basically saying, no, you're not going to. First of all, of course, you're supposed to get permission from Congress. And it was funny because Obama was going, yes, I am. And it's like, no, you're not going in. You're not moving in. Yes, I am. And what happened was over the course of a few weeks, the public just being the ones who were able to be in that open space, we didn't actually go in. We actually stayed out. I can't remember exactly where it was. It was like September last year. But yeah,
I think it was.
Yeah, and it was with Assad. And, yeah, because
it's,
we're right
it's
and
too
they're
bad we
wrong.
Didn't have that same conversation around Georgie.
Yeah.
How many hundreds of thousands of lives would have been saved? How much suffering would have been stopped? You know, and when you recognize that it was totally and completely over fraud, it's just amazing. It's amazing. So then,
but we are changing. We're talking about things now that we didn't then.
Pardon me?
I was just saying we talk about these things now, whereas 50 years ago people weren't talking about it. Not really, only a few. So it's out there, and it's growing, and it's growing, and it's growing. So.
And the, you know, from the Aramaic perspective, the peace that passes all understanding has nothing to do with making war on someone so that they'll be peaceful. The peace that passes all understanding is coming to the point where you've looked into your own heart, your own unconscious,
what in Aramaic was called the heart, and you've cleaned it out of from its hostility and fear.
And it passes all understanding. I was just going to say it passes all understanding. You'll understand it when you're in it. It's like that space after the first worksheet. People go, oh, my God, almost like you're in the presence of a newborn baby. Ah, I think I get it now. Or after still point breathing again, ah, that's the piece that passes all understanding. So.
Sure. That passage that says, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. Share some of your thoughts on that one, Dale.
I'd have to look in, like, where the exact phrase was, but the interesting thing about heart, that word liba, that word heart is, it's the place where in the ancient thought, it's where thought and feeling come together, which is basically, you know, that all feelings are triggered forth from thoughts. You know, there's some sort of a thought that's in the system that's not, if it's what feels like a negative feeling, then it's a thought that's not in resonance with the system, or should I say it's not in alignment with the system. And, you know, I'm so struck by how it's so clear on the worksheet. It's so incredibly clear on that worksheet how it's like, okay, identify my thoughts and my feelings and then the thoughts that are related to that. You know, when I actually say that to some people about that deeper aspect of what heart really means, a lot of people almost can't hear it. It's like they don't hear what I'm saying because they've never actually put those two things together. They've always had that belief that somehow emotions are something I'm a victim of, and there's not much I can do about it, and if I'm feeling an emotion I don't like the way it feels, then I need to stuff it down and try not to feel it because somehow that's what's peaceful or that's what's proper. No realization of realizing that it's about removing what's on the heart. Or, you know, I love that in the sixth beatitude, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Because in my gatherings, when I do the beatitudes, I always tell people, this one's pretty clear. As long as you've got at least some kind of grasp about heart and a grasp on some level of that God in Allah in Aramaic means absolute only being, the absolute truth. And see doesn't mean look at, but rather realize, comprehend. If you've, you know, got a handle on that, it's actually pretty clear. But heart is one of those words, like when you mentioned Freud, it's one of those words that wasn't so easy to translate. It sounds like it's an easy thing, heart. We know what heart is, right? But, of course, Yeshua was speaking in parables, speaking in metaphors, and there is some aspect of the actual physical heart there, but it's that place where when we are aware of what we're feeling, we're aware of what's up in the moment, and we're also aware that if we're having that feeling of fear or hostility, that there's some kind of a thought behind that. There's some kind of veil. There's something I'm seeking. And another great aspect of the worksheet, there's some goal that I've got set in this present moment, and that's not being met. And for some reason, it's a right goal, and it's a lofty goal, and this needs to be the right, proper goal, so I'm right, you're wrong. And that's going to start triggering things up, but I'm going to look at you and say that it's yours. Man, it's so incredibly clear. I think what I need to do is to, like, I think take care of the heart. I believe he's quoting the Hebrew Bible on that, so, but I'd have to look into it.
Well, for me, the point of it is that for out of it are the issues in life. The issues don't come from outside of us. They are created by us as creators, and when we choose to be unconscious, then through that unconscious process, we create an issue, and being trapped in Satana, in the resistor, one who misleads, we say, well, this has got nothing to do with me, it's all their fault, and then we've got a whole story. We're misled into looking outside of us for the source of our issues rather than inside of ourselves, and you know, that's what leads to all war, all divorce, all argument, fight, strife, trauma, and drama, is the refusal to look inside of one's own heart and clean up that unconscious part of the mind, that dissociated part of the mind. By the way, you may not have heard that. If you haven't looked on the website, we've got a new worksheet. And there's
cool.
Significant changes in it. It takes a whole different approach, actually, in step one especially. There's some other minor refinements, but the biggest change is in step one. And instead of starting with the object of attention, as I've done with it for the last 35 years, the worksheet now starts with my name and what I'm feeling. And right up front clarifies, my feelings are shadows of my thoughts. So that's the starting point. And then we move to the object of attention of the upset and the goal, but the starting point. So you might want to jump on whyagain.org, and Jeannie's put it right on the front page of the site. So you might want to grab a copy of that.
I think I saw an email that I flagged. I don't know that I opened it yet, that said new worksheet. So I think I may already actually have it.
Well, cool. I had sent you one a couple of weeks ago, but there have been some other refinements since, so you probably want
to
grab
it. You mean you actually made a change to the worksheet? Is that what you're saying? Oh, my God, really?
It's the first time in 35 years, yeah.
Well, that's the beauty of it. It allows itself to not be stuck in some kind of, ordinance, but it allows itself to be open in the flow of the moment, and that's how we grow and evolve with it. So,
Dale?
Yes?
We did a new video 2 weeks ago in Chicago, and in the week before doing that video, we've got a new 4-hour video we'll be coming out with on why is this happening to me again. But probably spent about 60 hours renovating the worksheet in that week before, so it was an intense one. And I think I heard Michelle's voice. Michelle?
Yes, yes. We've got less than 10 minutes here, and we've got a couple hands up. And Lisa has been waiting patiently for probably 40 minutes. Hey, Lisa.
Thanks so much. I wanted to introduce myself to Mr. Hoffman. I was telling Michael a few days ago that the pastor at Unity at Palm Beach Gardens in Jupiter had announced that you were going to come visit us.
Yes, a couple of weeks away. Yeah, a couple of weeks
away. Excellent. I'm so excited to be able to meet you. I wanted to welcome you and offer... I always offer Michael and Jeannie a place to stay by me if needed. I'm in the local area, but I'm very excited. And people were asking about you, and even today I had called, made a special point to tell Rhonda and the pastor about Michael's calls during the weekend that you would be on, so they may have heard you today.
Oh, cool. Trying to think. Is it Diane? Is that the minister there?
Yes, Diane.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because Reverend Diane's going to be up at Namaste in Hendersonville, South Carolina, or North Carolina, like just south of where I live in Asheville, when I'm going to be down there. I thought that was kind of funny. So, because I speak at Namaste a lot, too.
Yes, that's why she was disappointed she wasn't going to hear you. And I said, well, I made a special point when I knew you were going to be coming, and I called Michael about it. That, to listen to the radio show and that you were on every week and that, you're working together and to, have more understanding about what you're doing. So let me support you in that and welcome you.
Beautiful. Thank you. That's awesome. Yeah, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be a great weekend. Got 2 days there, so.
Yes, and let me know if I can help, sign the women up.
Yeah, maybe.
Are men not allowed?
I was going to say, forget the men, no men, but no, I'm kidding. But just sort of contact me somehow, like dale@daleallenhoffman.com. That's my email address. Like, hook up with me, send me an email, and then we can get connected that way.
And tell me again, what was the email address?
You didn't hear it the first time? Okay, it's the other one. Did you hear it? I'm just kidding. Dale, D-A-L-E, at daleallenhoffman.com.
Perfect. Okay, good, because I had asked for your email. So I'll do that, and then you'll be able to contact me just in case you need anything. But we're doing some kind of fashion show, so I'll be able to talk it up and let me know if I should, share any literature or, if I can be of assistance.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Perfect.
Take care. Perfect. Have a wonderful weekend.
Bye.
Hey, well, so cool. What are the dates you're going to be at Unity Palm Beach Gardens? So if anybody wants to come join you.
The funny thing is I've got to look on my website. It's the...
I know how that goes.
I will.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say real quick, in the meantime, I'm going to be at the Light Center in Black Mountain, North Carolina tonight with Bob Sima doing a concert and toning and prayer event called I Am, A Celebration of Life. We're doing that tonight at the Light Center here in North Carolina. Jupiter, Florida is October 19th and October 20th, Sunday and Monday. I'll be at both Sunday services and doing an afternoon thing on the 19th. And then on the 20th, I'm doing a Aramaic Toning Prayer and Cosmic Chant Circle with Crystal Singing Bowl. So that'll be beautiful, too. That's in
awesome.
Jupiter, Florida.
Sunday's Garden, Jupiter, Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you anywhere else in that area, Dale, at the time?
Not for that one, because I had to be back in Greenville on the 21st, like the next day, for something in the evening, a private event. So that's all that's in that span. But I will be in – I've got New Jersey. I've got near – back to Oswego, Illinois again. There was such a thunderous roar from the last time I was there a few weeks ago that I'm going back right before Thanksgiving. I'll be in Tarpon Springs, Florida, New Jersey, Maryland. I got a lot of stuff coming up between now and the end of the year. So,
well, we hold the space, and anybody who wants to get your schedule, you can go to www.daleallenhoffman.com. And of course, this Sunday will, or Saturday, pardon me, we'll be keynoting at the Spiritual Unity of Nations Conference, sponsored by the Coptic Center in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Gene and I are about an hour from Grand Rapids, driving down the road. We stopped to do the show. And then Sunday we'll start at Unity in Grand Rapids and do their service. And then Sunday afternoon, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, all free workshops. Saturday we'll have the one paid workshop that we do, Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, next Saturday. And not the Saturday coming, but a week Saturday. And then the next day we'll be in Lansing doing a similar series, a week-long series. We'll have a few days off, and then we'll be heading to Pinckney, Michigan to do a 9-day codependence to interdependence. So anybody wants to come and play, there's lots happening between Dale and myself, and we'd be delighted to have you join us anywhere along the road.
Could you please say hello to John Davis for me when you see him in Grand Rapids?
I will.
I adore him.
Absolutely.
He's great.
I'll pass on a hug for you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, he talked to him yesterday. He's been one of those crusaders from the beginning for taking the real message forward to the world for so many years. I know back 30 years ago we were working together on a conference with get my brain back to the Light Center.
Cool. Yeah, he was just here in Asheville a couple weeks ago, Hendersonville, and I had an event at the same time, so I couldn't hook up with him. But
missed it, yeah. Who am I thinking of that started the Light Center?
Jim Gore.
Jim, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, back 30 years ago, we were doing Spiritual Unity of Nations conferences back with Jim Gore. And actually, I used to go up to the Light Center every weekend for probably 3 years. When Jim was alive, and spend time with him, and a lot of stuff happened up there. Did a lot of teaching there, did a lot of learning there, processing. It was an awesome
beautiful
time.
Place. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. You still feel him there. You can feel him there, definitely.
Yeah, it was a shock when he left.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got about 2 minutes left. Anybody else with
well,
a question?
Yes,
the
we do. 901, we've got just a minute. Can you say hi?
Hi, yeah, this is Vernie. Hi, Michael. Hi, Dale.
Hey, Vernie.
Hi.
I have a question. When you were talking on the heart, and I just wanted to clarify, I have thought that when thought and emotions are in balance, then you have wisdom. Is that similar to what you were talking about in regard to the heart?
Well, for me, wisdom... thought and emotion would be an outside.
About 80 seconds.
Okay, it's basically an out picturing. Wisdom isn't anything that involves mind. It's not. It doesn't even really involve thought or emotion. What wisdom actually means in the ancient teachings is to be open in that flow, so that you're an open vessel that everything can flow through you, rather than any kind of, you know, balance of thought and mind is an effect, or should I say, a result of wisdom,
okay.
But not a precursor. If that's what you're saying, so yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and Michael, I'll ask my other questions on Monday.
Awesome.
Okay.
Well, we're down to the last
few
seconds, so we will close the show out. Thank you, Vernie, for your call. We appreciate you being on our team. And Dale, we certainly appreciate you being on our team, and we'll say hello to Dr. Tim, who's doing a a presentation for a business group today, so we didn't get to hear from him. And in the meantime, we hold that everybody has the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. And bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. We'd be delighted to interact. Blessings. Monday, pardon me. Go ahead. Take care, Dale. Love you.
Love you.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.